We continue to hear dire news about the COVID-19 pandemic. We're hearing stories and accounts of the numbers going up, the rates of infection in places like Minnesota beginning to go up. Dr. Michael Osterholm is talking about how this isn't the second wave. We're still on the first wave here in the middle of the country. And then, of course, on top of everything else, the CDC had to call off a study after reports of racism and intimidation against the surveyors of color that they sent out to talk with folks on a voluntary basis about their experience with COVID-19, and that is something that happened right here in Minnesota. So it's hard to know if, even if we survive COVID-19, if we'll be able to survive all the things that we've discovered about our friends and neighbors. Dr. Catherine McCarty joins us this morning. She's an epidemiologist. She's the Associate Dean for Research and a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Biobehavioral Health here at UMD. Kathy, good morning. Nice to have you with us this morning.
Good morning. It's great to be with you again on this wonderful fall morning.
It is indeed. So let's begin with the CDC calling off their study after reports of racism and intimidation against people of color. And this kind of ties into something that we'll be talking about a little bit later in the conversation, which is, I think, some of the misinformation that's circulating about COVID-19. But talk about that a little bit and what the implications are for the CDC needing to call off this survey before they had all the information.
Oh, this is so sad. So as an epidemiologist, we've been talking over the last few months about how we just haven't had enough data. And to also expect, I'm going to remind listeners that because we don't have enough data and we're learning all the time, what I'm telling you today will likely change somehow in the coming months as we learn more, because it's novel, new, and we just didn't know anything about it. We're learning all the time. So this was the perfect epidemiologic study. So we have not had good epidemiologic data to make decisions about public health restrictions and things to prevent the virus. The way that we get that is large-scale testing of the general population, not just people who are symptomatic, but really the general population, because we feel that there is a lot more disease out there, infections, than we're aware of, because people have mild symptoms and just, you know, aren't tested, not tested for lots of reasons, including afraid to go in for healthcare. We've seen drops in people reporting to EDs, emergency departments, for acute things that we expect to see, heart attacks and strokes, because people are concerned about getting the virus going into the ED. I'm going to remind people, it's a safe place to go. If you're having symptoms of anything, please go into the emergency department. But at any rate, really good epidemiologic data is a cross-section. And so our Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, funding a number of these studies across the U.S., including here in Minnesota, in a number of regions across the state, where public health workers, so identified, if you look at the website, you can see how they, like, well-identified as public health workers, representatives hired by the Minnesota State Health Department to go door-to-door to get information from household members about potential COVID exposure and then do COVID testing, which everyone's been wanting. I think we all want to have, there are two kinds of tests. I'm going to remind people that test that shows whether or not somebody has an active infection at the moment, regardless of whether or not they've got symptoms. And then the antibody test. So our body makes proteins to fight against the virus, and they stay in our blood and can be tested for a long time. Still don't know exactly how long they stay and whether that means we're not able to be infected again. Generally, it's a good thing in terms of getting a new infection, at least for a while. So people would have free testing done, and we would have the information, all of us. All of us in the state would have the information that we all need to protect ourselves and to protect fellow Minnesotans. And unfortunately, really, really, really unfortunately, the public health workers, again, well-identified, going door-to-door to get this information, offer free testing that's hard to get because of supplies, low supplies in the state, were subjected to racial slurs and intimidation. And intimidation puts it mildly because people were threatened. It gives me goosebumps. It's sad. I'm embarrassed on behalf of all Minnesotans that this happened in our state. It should not happen anywhere. Definitely not a Minnesotan value. And so CDC had to stop this. So we will not have this information and continue to not have the really high quality detailed information that we need to manage this pandemic. And I want to remind people that this racism that exists, it translates into different numbers for our fellow Minnesotans. So everybody should be aware. We crossed just recently crossed in Minnesota the 2,000 death rate due to COVID. In the U.S., greater than 200,000 deaths from COVID now. The Johns Hopkins site, which we've talked about before and is really the most up-to-date, shows as of yesterday 206,000 deaths here in the U.S. African Americans in the U.S. represent 1 in 5 of the COVID deaths in the U.S., 21%, and yet they're only 12% of the U.S. population. So discriminated against in terms of health care, resulting in that they have a lower life expectancy by 3.5 years than whites in the U.S. And they're dying more to COVID, and then had these horrible acts of aggression against our public health workers. So really very unfortunate.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the misinformation that is circulating about COVID. I know that there I was astonished and saddened to see, this was in Ohio, on the national news last night, the reporter asked a group of people how many of them, she went out it was a rural area in Ohio, and she asked how many of the people felt that the coronavirus had been deliberately introduced into our country by China. Everybody raised their hand. They felt that this was something that had been developed and brought here on purpose. Talk a little bit about some of the misinformation about coronavirus and perhaps how this heightened suspicion of one another and of everyone and everything is translating. I don't think it matters what side of the political spectrum you're on. I've heard a lot of cynics or people on both sides of the ideological spectrum that just feel like, yeah, well, this nefarious thing is par for the course.
Oh, I have heard the same, and I'm surprised I had not seen that statistic around the percentage of Midwesterners that feel that it was purposefully introduced. I know that it's high for sure, but that then leads to further discrimination against Asian Americans here in the U.S. I don't know how we fight that. I think the other statistic that I've seen from surveys is the percentage of people willing to get a vaccine, and that's frighteningly low. That needs to increase for us to have herd immunity, and also ties into, boy, falsehoods on when the vaccine is likely available. So there are a number of vaccine trials going on right now. We talked about that last time, and more will come up regularly as there are new vaccines, the potential discovered, and get into the testing phases. I think it's likely that we'll have some vaccine. It's potential that we'll have something that's gone through, and it has to go through the approval process, especially here in the U.S. You know, the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, approves them, and there's a really high bar in terms of testing before it can be available. And even after it is available, testing afterwards to make sure there aren't any long-term effects that couldn't have been anticipated in the trials, the initial trials for approval. Even once it's available, we have a vaccine tested, meets that high bar of efficacy and safety to be available, then we have to have all of the supplies for delivering the vaccine, for making enough of it, and then delivering it. So it won't be available. It's not like, okay, it gets approved by the FDA on January 1st and January 2nd. The U.S. can line up and get a vaccine, don't we wish? Instead, we'll have to prioritize as the production ramps up to be available. As that happens, we need people to accept and understand the very high bar for vaccine approval here in the U.S.
I don't think that it is a mistake, though. I mean, I can certainly understand, and I confess to feeling that way myself a little bit, when it seems as though the science and these organizations that are charged to protect us and to enforce those high standards have somehow been strong-armed into the politicization of the whole thing. I mean, it's sort of become this deadline would be really advantageous, to happen right before the election, and so this is when it's going to happen. How do we need to go about untangling science and politics as we move forward? Right now, of course, it's a very complicated and perhaps impossible time to do that. But as we go forward, do you feel that we do need to sort of untangle science and politics again and have them sort of go back to their respective corners?
Well, respective corners, although as a scientist, of course, I would argue that science influence political policy in a big way. We haven't seen that enough. And yes, it does feel as a scientist like, I mean, certainly at a societal level that we've had this politicization of science and masks. And we've talked about masks as well and the falsehoods about masks. And there is solid data. I'll just remind people, there is solid data that a mask works. There was a quote recently from a scientist around the value of a mask versus a vaccine. So a vaccine will never be 100% effective. They aren't. It's just not possible for various reasons, including one's own immune system and how you respond to the vaccine. So, and this is why herd immunity is important. Some people can never get the vaccine, and for some people it won't be effective. But if enough people in a population, a herd of us, have a vaccine, then that's how it becomes effective in the entire population.
So talk just briefly as we wrap up here. One of the things that you've pointed out that is a part of your job and also something that you're passionate about is this study of ethics. I heard recently and felt like it really explained a lot of things to me, and it also reawakened a sense of empathy that it, in my thought process at least, had really been missing, I noticed. An explanation that for those who support the president and his anti-science stance, that it's not so much that they believe the president, it's that they feel that not believing the president is sort of opening the door to all kinds of policies and positions that they're just extremely uncomfortable with, that they feel attacks things that they believe and that they just really feel threatened by. And that was a way of explaining things that made sense to me. And although I don't agree across the board, it was really helpful to get insight and make a step toward empathy and understanding. If you are a person who wants to reach out to friends or family members and talk with them about COVID-19, you're worried about your safety, you're worried about the health of someone else in your friend or family circle, and you kind of want to encourage people to go with the mask thing, to go with the science thing. I'm sure you've had a number of these conversations in your own family and friend circle. What are some ways that we can communicate when right now we not only are we polarized, but if you try to present an opposing viewpoint to someone, no matter where it is that you've started, I'm finding out that the response is, "Oh, you've really drunk the Kool-Aid."
Well, it starts with listening. So communication starts with not talking, but listening. So listening to what somebody's opposition is to wearing a mask. What do they know about it, and what have their sources been? So as a scientist, I talk about what I think are good sources for information. Our Minnesota State Health Department's fantastic. It's really well-resourced, and it's updated daily. It's a fantastic source of information with links to other good sources of information. So I start with, well, where'd you get this information? And again, not attacking, listening, listening, listening all the time. And then think about an analogy that might work, and it be different for different people. Sometimes the seatbelt use works. You know, it's a nuisance sometimes putting on that seatbelt. But it's good for me. Or any other sort of a public health measure. Tuberculosis, interestingly, the public health campaign around that, 100 years ago nearly, was about spitting and making it become not cool, effectively, to spit in public because that was transmitting tuberculosis. So, public health campaigns. And with the mask, maybe it's high fashion, and you're seeing some of that already, right? So, people are groups are making masks as fundraisers, and people are wanting masks to match their outfits. Makes it make it a fun as well.
Well,
and again, attacking.
Did I or did I not just order a red buffalo check and a black buffalo check mask? Going forward, knowing that we're getting into plaid and flannel season up here, and oh yeah, when you're on the radio, it's really important to be fashionable.
Well, and all of us from the waist up, when we need our Zoom clothing.
Oh, exactly. So your mask either needs to match what you're wearing, or, I think even better, get a green screen mask, and then it'll look like half your face is gone. It's Halloween. I'm starting to look forward to stuff like that. So.
Oh, it's feeling like it.
Yeah, it is indeed. Dr. Catherine McCarty, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate you taking the time, and it's also always wonderful to have you on and have you sort of put things in plain language for us and distill it down a little bit. Thanks again for being our guest.
Oh, great to talk to you. Be good to everyone.
Be good to one another. Dr. Catherine McCarty, our guest this morning. She's the Associate Dean for Research and a professor in the Department of Family Medical and Biobehavioral Health here at UMD. She's also an epidemiologist and joined us as our guest this morning on Northland Morning.